Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode, we celebrate not only America's independence, but we discuss and celebrate the only man in pro football history to do almost everything on the contribution front, a couple of items of CFL history to note, and the birthdays of some very special Hall of Fame players that are revered and remembered, and it's all coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we are podcasting from America's North Shore, bringing you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So in taking the snap from the sportshistorynetwork.com and handing off to pigskindispatch.com, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of pigskindispatch.com, and welcome to the Pigpen on this day where we celebrate America's independence, the 4th of July, and all the football history that comes on that day throughout our history of the great gridiron game. And we're going to cover some different leagues, some different levels of football, and we're going to give you just some great nuggets of football history that you can share with others and look like the smartest person at your barbecue this 4th of July. We'll start off with our newspapers.com football history headline of the day. It comes from the July 4th, 1968 Ottawa Citizen in Ottawa, Canada. And it's had the great posting and commentary of "Time to Drop Import Rule." The article discusses the plight in Canada where Canadian football players were raising their prices based on the supply and demand theory in the CFL. At the time, each of the Canadian Football League franchises were to have no less than 18 Canadians on their active roster. Ottawa Rough Riders head coach at the time, Frank Clair, was quoted saying, "I predict that if the prices of Canadian players continue to rise, then the import rule will go." According to the CFL.ca website, the current import rule reads that each team may have a maximum of 46 players, including two players who shall be identified as quarterbacks, and 44 other players of whom are not more than 20 may be American players. So that's what was happening. The American players were coming in at a very high number in 1968 in the Canadian Football League. Because if you remember, back in the 60s and 50s, the CFL and the NFL were sort of on par with each other, and especially with pay to players. So there's players that could bounce back and forth going whatever the highest price was. And the Canadian Football League was very competitive with salaries back then. But what would happen is having all these American players pour in and having known that you had to have at least 18 Canadian players, the Canadian players said, "Hey, you know, what are we, just bargain basement? Well, we want more money too." And it drove the price of salaries up and cost, you know, CFL teams more. And that's what they were worried about happening. And it looks like eventually that did break through where you can't have any more than 20 American players now on that 46-person roster. So the 18 went up to just a little bit more with the Canadians. If you want to be able to read through some old articles like the Ottawa Citizen, you need to check out newspapers.com. At newspapers.com, you get access to over 640 million pages worth of news from the U.S., Canada, England, Scotland, Ireland, and more, dating all the way back to 1798 to yesterday. Get a free one-week subscription to newspapers.com by visiting sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. And with a paid subscription, you'll also be helping to support the production of this and other Sports History Network shows. Once again, for those free 7 days, sportshistorynetwork.com/newspapers. You're going to like that, and I think you're going to subscribe as soon as you see how great the newspapers.com truly is. Speaking of the CFL, July 4th, 1995, in the CFL, the Birmingham Alabama Barracudas team played their first game, defeating the Winnipeg Blue Bombers 38-10. Unfortunately, the squad folded after just one season in the Canadian Football League. That was the year or a couple years where the CFL tried the American expansion, and they had a variety of American franchises pop up. You know, not only Birmingham, but they had Baltimore. I believe they had San Antonio and Vegas come up. They had a bunch of them all over the place, and unfortunately, America did not support the CFL like they thought maybe would happen in those mid-90s. Possibly, it will have more success maybe if they do that merger that's been rumored with the XFL. Maybe that'll help the CFL to get a little bit of a hold in America and have some support. Now let's go to our Hall of Fame birthdays for this July 4th, and we'll start off in the year 1912. Nakusa, Wisconsin, Edgar Mansk, the legendary Northwestern end from 1931 to 1933, was born. The National Football Foundation says that this player had a lot going on for him. He worked his way through college, married a campus beauty queen, and was the last man to play football without a helmet. There's a great little trivia question for you. And the answer is Edgar Mansk. Mance was known to friends and opponents alike as Eggs. He played 3 years at end for Northwestern and was named All-America by the United Press in 1933. With no athletic scholarships available in that era, Mansk worked his butt off during the school year. He even continued his education after graduation at Northwestern, and he obtained a law degree, did it all on his own dollar just by earning money. The NFF bio goes on to say that his life was varied after his Northwestern education. He spent 1934 as an assistant coach at Boston University, played pro football from 1935 to 1940, and was with the Chicago Bears when they beat the Washington Redskins 73-0 in the 1940 NFL Championship game. That was his last pro game. But he played in 1942 with St. Mary's Pre-Flight School and was an All-Service All-America. The College Football Hall of Fame proudly placed a display in honor of Edgar Mansk into their legendary museum in 1989. July 4th, 1929, Brockton, Massachusetts. Al Davis is the Pro Football Hall of Fame legendary owner of the Oakland and Los Angeles Raiders. His famous moniker was Just Win, Baby, and the man was involved with pro football for 49 years, not only as a franchise owner, but he was also as a personnel director, scout, coach, general manager, and was even the AFL's commissioner for a time. The only person in history to perform all of those duties. In fact, Davis was so instrumental in the quick merger of the two leagues in the late 1960s, that's the AFL and NFL, putting the NFL into an aggressive upward trajectory. The Al Davis-led Raiders had the top record of all professional teams for the period of 1960 to 1991. Davis helped the Raiders to win Super Bowl XI, Super Bowl XV, and XVIII. He was the AFL Coach of the Year in 1963. The Pro Football Hall of Fame enshrined Al Davis as a contributor in 1992. July 4th, 1942. New Haven, Connecticut. Syracuse halfback from 1964 to 1966, Floyd Little arrived into the world. This legendary back has a great story as told by the footballfoundation.org website. At Syracuse, he is connected with the other great orange legendary runners of that era, Ernie Davis and Jim Brown, as they all wore the special jersey number at Syracuse, number 44, at the school. And in fact, it was retired in honor of all three after Little played his last game. Floyd was a three-time All-American halfback who was a specialist as a return man. Little led the nation with 1,990 all-purpose yards, along with 23.5 yards per punt return average as a junior in 1965. He still holds the Syracuse record with 6 punt returns for touchdowns. The 1966 ECAC Player of the Year, Little finished 5th in the Heisman Trophy voting twice. He averaged 5.4 yards as a rusher, 20 yards on punt returns, and 29 on kickoff returns. Floyd's longest punt returns included a 90-yarder against UCLA and a 71-yard return against Penn State in 1964, 95 yards on return against Pitt, and 91 against Penn State in 65. And his best rushing games included 216 yards in a 1967 Gator Bowl against Tennessee. He also had 196 rushing yards against against West Virginia in 1965 and 193 against Florida State in 1966. He scored 5 touchdowns against Kansas in 1964 in one game. And one of his most amazing facts is Floyd shared the same orange backfield as legendary runner Larry Zonka. Floyd Little's collegiate football records are celebrated in the College Football Hall of Fame after his induction in 1983. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame shares that Little was picked by the Denver Broncos in the 1967 as the 6th overall player selected. The Broncos used him mostly as a return specialist at first. And as a rookie, he led the American Football League in punt returns with 16.9 yards per average on 16 returns. That first season, Floyd scored his only touchdown in AFL courtesy of a 72-yard return against the New York Jets. Little also returned a career-high 35 kickoffs for 942 yards. And over the next couple of years, he worked hard to enhance his pro rushing skills, and by his third season, Denver gave him more carries. Little rose to the challenge, too, as he averaged a league-high and career-best 5.0 yards per carry. In 1971, he became the first 1,000-yard rusher in Denver Broncos history. And Floyd went on and won the NFL rushing title that year as he finished with 1,133 yards on 284 carries and 6 touchdowns. Remember, I believe that was only a 14-game season then. And Floyd Little was also enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame in a 2010 class. July 4th, 1943, Augusta, Georgia. Maryland Eastern Shores halfback from 1962 to 1965, Emerson Boozer claimed his date of birth. The NFF says in Emerson's bio that he was a 2-time first-team All-American by the Pittsburgh Courier. Boozer amassed 2,537 yards and 22 touchdowns during his career. He averaged a remarkable 6.78 yards per carry and was named the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association's All-Conference pick in 1964 and 65. Emerson Boozer received the great honor of being selected for inclusion into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2010, and Boozer played professionally in both the AFL and the NFL for the New York Jets, and he won a ring in Super Bowl III when the Jets defeated the Colts in that great upset that Joe Namath predicted. July 4th, 1953, Inglewood, California. Bob Brunick, who was a 1972 to 1974 standout Arizona State linebacker, was born. The footballfoundation.org tells us that Bob was a first-team All-American in 1974, and Brunick finished his career as Arizona State's all-time leader with 353 tackles and a stellar 206 solo tackles, placing him in the school's top 10 in each category. Brunick was named Arizona State's MVP in 74, and he appeared in the Coaches All-America Bowl, the East-West Shrine Game, and the Hula Bowl following his senior season. The standout linebacker played with the College Football Hall of Famers Michael Haynes, John Jefferson, and Danny White during one of the most successful runs in ASU school history, as the Sun Devils had consecutive Fiesta Bowl wins and WAC titles in 72 and 73. Bob Brunick was honored with induction into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2015 after the National Football Foundation tabulated up their votes. And Bob was taken in the third round of the 75 NFL draft by the Dallas Cowboys. He spent 10 seasons with the franchise, according to the NFF, and he became a 3-time Pro Bowl selection, led the Cowboys in tackles for 4 seasons, and was part in helping the Cowboys to 3 Super Bowl appearances and a win in Super Bowl XII. July 4th, 1962, LaFleur County, Mississippi. Mississippi Valley State quarterback from the seasons of 1982 to 1985, Willie Totten arrived into this life. In his NFF bio, Totten is described as the satellite. And Willie's college career was definitely in outer orbit, as he is the Division I AA's all-time leader and ranks second in career passing yards with 12,711 and a single season passing yards of 4,557 in 1984. He twice led the nation in passing efficiency. 5 times Totten's career, he passed for more than 530 yards in a single game, including a whopping 599-yard performance in 84 against Prairie View. Willie's favorite receiver? Well, let's just say he's a guy by the name of Jerry Rice. Ever hear of him? These two teamed up to be a nightmare for opposing defenses. And Willie earned first-team All-American status in 1984 after leading the nation and setting an all-time single-season touchdown passes mark with 56 for all divisions of the nation's colleges. He had a brief professional career in the Canadian and the Arena Football Leagues and then went back to his studies, earning his master's degree from Grambling before becoming the head coach at his alma mater in Europe. year 2001. The National Football Foundation selected Willie Totten for entrance into the College Football Hall of Fame in 2005. Now, if there's something that we missed on the July 4th Gridiron History, please let us know via email, pigskindispatch@gmail.com, and we will get right on that and add it into our blog post and our podcast for next year for the July 4th when you listen to it. And we are sure glad that you were able to join us here today. We hope you join us each and every day for just some little nuggets of football history. We want to put that in your football brain one day at a time and try to go through all of football history at all levels and all the most significant events and people that were born in history. And we're trying to expand that each and every day and try to add a little bit more, a little bit more. So it never gets old. It's going to stay evergreen. It's always going to be relevant to football history. And we hope you enjoy that. And we're sure glad that you were able to join us again today. Check us out on sportshistorynetwork.com, where we and about 20 other great podcasters are on there talking about sports history and bringing you the knowledge to make that site the headquarters of Sports Yesteryear. You can also go to the portal of positive football history, pigskindispatch.com. That's our home site, and we have all of our podcasts there and all of our blog posts, and we're always looking for some great football stories to post on there, and we have something new each and every day for you, so check it out. It's always changing. And again, email us at pigskindispatch@gmail.com. You can go on Twitter at Pigskin Dispatch. On Facebook, we have the Pigskin Dispatch page. I also post as Darren Hayes. And you can go to the subreddit in Reddit of our sports history, and we post there nearly every day, as well as LinkedIn under my name, Darren Hayes. So look us up, check us out, give us a shout, give us your input, and help us preserve that football history. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.